Welcome back to the Thoughtful Techie Cloud podcast.
I am accompanied today with Ryan, Shu, and Pat, all solution architecture leaders. And this is for anyone who's ever been interested in being a solutions architect to really get some insight from folks that have been here a while, with solution architecture leaders, and myself to really kind of guide you on that path. So I'm going to turn it over here to our solution architecture leaders first for a round of intros, starting with Ryan first.
Hey, thanks for having me, Greg. Hi, everyone. I'm Ryan McGrady. I'm a senior manager on the startup solutions architecture team. And I oversee a team of SAs that work with our technology partners and offer technology solutions on the AWS marketplace. So we help them on best practices and how to implement on the platform.
Thanks, Ryan. Shu, over to you.
Hello, everyone. My name is Shu Jackson. I am a solutions architect manager at Amazon. I have joined Amazon for about 2 years now. I actually joined as a solutions architect, and I basically pivoted into a manager's position after a year into the role. I lead one of our machine learning core team in the startups org. Basically, our customers for the SAs on my team are the startup customers who use machine learning as either the core or support as of their product and service offerings.
Thanks, you. And Pat?
Hey, everyone. I'm Pat Santoro, Solutions Architect Manager over here at AWS. Been here for about 2 years, have about 40 years experience in technology. But basically, I run a team here, which is in the generalist group. So think startups that are just taking off, getting more familiar with the cloud, have some spend. And we engage with them quite heavily to help them understand what's possible and get them moving. Pleasure to be here. This should be fun.
That's great. So one thing I picked up, Ryan, Shu, and Pat, is it's a lot more than I want to be a solution architect at AWS. They're different teams. So Ryan, you work with the ISV team, independent software vendor. Shu, you work with machine learning core team. And Pat, you do the generalist approach. So if I'm outside looking in, trying to figure out where I'm going to be most successful, what advice would you have for our future SA candidates?
I can start.
Okay.
So I think really the solution architect job is the same at the core, no matter what team you're on, right? Your job is, as an Amazonian, is to be customer obsessed, right? Get to know our customers, see how you can help them in the best way possible. And then as far as like the specialty territories, we really collect the customers together as a way that allows the SA to help them best versus around either programs or tools or things that we have. So in my particular specialty, ISV, it's really about there are a lot of programs that we have for either SaaS companies or companies who are going to sell, go to market with us on the AWS marketplace. And these SAs are have special knowledge in those programs and things that and those kinds of architectures. But it's the same kind of general technical level of expertise. They still need to know about cloud, about all our different services we offer, and all of that stuff too. It's just the customers they work with are a little bit specialized.
That makes sense. Now, Shu, moving over to you, you're machine learning. So if I wanted to aspire to be a solution architect on your team, would I need to have deep knowledge of machine learning, AI, and data science, ideally?
Ideally, yes. Not necessarily deep knowledge, but at least a couple years of experience in the field of machine learning or data science. The SA role is different from a data scientist role. So you wouldn't be building like machine learning models, but you would need to understand basic like ML concepts and be able to speak the language of our customers who and their data science team. Like Ryan said, that the fundamental IT knowledge, cloud knowledge is always required. And on top of that, if you want to work for the MLC team, definitely we're looking for at least a couple of years of experience in machine learning.
Awesome. And then Pat, certainly last but not least, now you said generalist. So last time I checked, AWS has 200 plus services. What is that going to look like if I'm on your team? Which I am,
that's
actually
a great question. And you are, you yeah. are with me.
Well,
yeah, that's a great question. Yeah. Think about like a solutions architect as being like an extension of a customer's team. So we're the technical body of AWS. They may have their own technical team, but in this case, we align with them to be able to help them understand what is possible in the cloud. So yes, we have plenty of services, but what we really do is touch base on a couple of different levers. So think we're startups, right? So we want to help customers cost optimize. We talk about different levers on cost optimization so they don't burn through their runway and get moving on that front. But then we also do such things as do documentation and diagramming with the customer to help them understand what they currently have and where they are going. And then based off of what we deliver from that, we may find ourselves, like, for instance, it's not one essay is going to know everything. There's so many things to learn here, and we're always changing. It's the nature of technology, and it's the nature of the cloud. So what we do is we're not necessarily hands-on keyboard. We basically help involve the customer and help them get down the path about, like, where they can go. And if we ever need to bring in anybody that's really highly specialized on any of our services, we have a broad team of specialists here that we bring in to help them get over the hump, wherever that might be. So we just kick open the door, help them in, and then we do a great amount of aligning with our customers to help them find the right resources. So we spread the load across the board in the generalist group. And that goes for any of our...
That makes perfect sense. We may revisit how you mentioned about specialists and talk a little bit in a later question about what kind of resources does an SA have to be successful. Maybe we'll elaborate in the... shortly on the SA one team type of principle. But before we go on, let's just take a brief step back here. What can someone define what a solutions architect is? If I'm looking at this at a high level, I'm an architect of solutions. Kind of like when you get the question, so what do you do? I'm a solutions architect. What would you tell somebody? What does a solution architect actually do?
I guess I'll take that one. I could jump in.
Okay.
So think about us as soundboards. We're looked at as many different angled ways, but when I come in, like, I was a solutions architect starting here, and now I'm a solutions architect manager. And when I worked with customers, it was really about just helping them, again, see what's possible and then be that trusting soundboard. Like, we always want to gain trust here. It's one of our main LPs, our leadership principles. And we always want to make sure customers see what's possible, understand how to give prescriptive guidance to help them achieve where they're going, and then be able to help them down the road throughout the year. So we'll start doing common engagements with customers. We have another team, which is a business side that we work with. We have account managers, for examples. So a solutions architect is tethered to an account manager. Account managers come in, talk about the business aspect of what's possible at AWS, different type of plans that customers can get involved with. But then we come in and help them with pain points, any type of issue that they're having, help them escalate anything on the support side, and then talk about what they can do to modernize to go forward, including training and helping the customer, again, understand, like, what those services look like. Those are very primary pieces to our role here as solutions architects.
Oh, that's great. Thanks, Pat.
I'd like to touch on that last question you had, Greg, too, on what a solutions architect is. Been asked that question many a times. And I say a solution architect job is that they'll interface with our customers, and the folks that we meet with on the customer side, their job is to be experts in their company's technology, whatever their application is that they're building, whatever it is. And that they go out and they learn just enough AWS to get the job done to build what they need to build. What we're trying to build for startups in solutions architecture is someone who's on the other side, who it's the solutions architect's job to know what AWS can do. And then they come in and they get to know the customer's technology enough that they can say, oh, maybe there's this thing you don't know about or this thing you don't know about. You're Courtney, I think Pat said it before, an extension of the customer, but you're the customer's kind of, like, directly assigned AWS. And I think it sometimes gets confused. People think, oh, so you're like support for me. Your job is to, if it's broken, then you're going to help me fix it. That's not what a solutions architect is for.
That's one thing I wanted to double click on, the distinction between this is not a break fix type of thing. If you could, maybe we could double click on that, Ryan.
Yeah. So it's not that there's a vast support team in AWS that helps with break fix type issues. SAs are meant to be more visionary. It's great. A big key base part of it is curiosity about AWS services and technology in general and liking to learn about that. But just as important is being someone who is just interested in what customers are building and having someone who has that kind of builder nature at your core that is interested in what startups are trying to create so that you could take your experience, whether it was in your career up to now or what you've been working with and learning specific to AWS, and use it to mentor these startups as they build out their technical solutions from a cloud side.
Gotcha. So what I'm hearing is a solution architect is very outcome focused. So they're working backwards. And I don't want to steal anybody's thunder, but can someone talk a little bit about kind of the Amazon working backward process and how an essay leverages that to help their customers?
Yeah, the way I see it, we always start with the business objective of the customers, right? What is the customer's business trying to achieve in terms of their business, like what type of initiative, a project they want to launch? And then from there, we work backwards, look at the available technologies we have and how to basically build a solution to achieve their business goals. Yeah, as opposed to support, like there's a technical issue, like how do I fix that technical issue? As I say, we're supposed to be able to dive deep into technical issue, yes, but also should be able to elevate the conversation and connect that to the business goals.
Perfect. So let's say I am working at AWS as a solution architect. Walk me through, what does my typical day-to-day look like as an SA?
That's a loaded question.
I like to ask loaded questions. I know it depends, but if you could, the summation of a lot of different averages.
Yeah, we do day-to-day ranges, right? As technology changes and shifts all the time. Customers need change and shift all the time. So some days you'll come in and you'll have a light day. You'll have some customer engagements talking about maybe some cost optimization levers. Get on a couple of phone calls, talk about what could be done there and help them get over the milestone to try to start engaging with cost optimization work, right? Then other days can be very impactful when it's all about architecture. You got architectural calls, you talk to them about that, and you talk about stitching together, literally doing like a screen share and talking about what do you have? Like here we can understand like what customers are generally using, but then talking with them about like, how is this all stitching together here? To help better modernize them going forward. Talk about, here's where you are, here's where we can take you, and then be able to talk through that. And then from that, we call build out new opportunities. And these opportunities are further engagements, like other phone calls where we bring in maybe specialists and things like that. So our job is to also find specialists. And we have mechanisms here that actually help us do that fairly quickly. But we bring the specialists in. We also learn from those specialists as SAs. As we've mentioned earlier, there's a lot of services here. So we'll bring in those specialists. As me as an SA, when I was starting as an SA, I didn't know all services. I wasn't expected to know all services. So that's definitely a highlight. There's not expected to know everything, but I've learned a lot along the way.
Yeah, including comforting.
There's a lot to learn here. So there's just engaging with our customers, right? There's also a lot of training that we go through continually to understand what's better and best practice in the cloud. Then there's also an internal view. So that's like the external view to customers, but we also have internal tracks. So there's a lot of different teams here that we talk to internally, different type of initiatives that we work on together to help get our customers over finish lines. Like we're here to disrupt. We're here to find the best solution, not only for ourselves as AWS, but for our customers. And as solutions architects, we're actually given the power to do that. And it's quite frankly, pretty exciting. So I don't know about any of you, but it's one of the best jobs I've been at and been able to really accelerate my growth through. So
yeah, I'll plus one that as well. Thanks, Pat. I just wanted to take a moment to Don Mitchell from our LinkedIn audience says technology and cloud as an enabler for the business. So yeah, definitely. Cloud is definitely, and technology is definitely an enabler for the business. I would say now more than ever, tech and the business are like intertwined now so more than ever to enable customers or business outcomes and that business's overall success. Let's see here. I'm just panning through some of the audience here. I want to just pause and give our panel a little bit of a rapid fire break from questions I'm throwing at you. Let's take some, see if we can find some easier ones here. Yeah. So I have a question here from Eric Nord. It says, what does a significant win look like in the partner solution architect role? So that's another flavor of a solution architect. I don't know if we can speak to that or.
I think that's a good Ryan question. What do you think, Ryan?
Be closely ISE related a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think it's funny because I actually saw that question roll in. That's been like rattling around in my head of what significant win looks like here. I think you could probably attest to this, Greg, but that our SA wins on this particular team, on the startups team and in any SA role at AWS is all over the place. It's not just your standard typical company. Did we close a big revenue deal? It can be all sorts of stuff. It can be, did we help them modernize a workload? A lot of times, funny, like contrary to what you would think, sometimes some of our biggest wins are in the realm of cost optimization or moving on to a newer technology that actually gets the customer to spend less on AWS. We celebrate that just as much as we do the ones where we got a commitment for an EVP or something like that, because how we look at wins is really, it's customer obsessed. It's from the customer backwards, right? A win for us is the customer landing a big customer on their platform, or a customer launching a new product line or a new SaaS version of their product. They've had something that was on-prem or that was living in different people's accounts, and they really wanted to move up the next gen and deploy software as a service. Like, seeing those kind of launches, that's what we celebrate as big wins. It's not your typical close to big contract. Those happen on the sales side, but they really don't make it on my radar as an SA manager.
Thank you, Ryan. I have quite a lengthy question that has just popped in here. Multidimensional. Maybe we'll just take one aspect of it. But one thing that popped out here for me was Robert says, do SAs have sales quotas? Let's attack it from that angle. Because yeah, that's good information that maybe not everybody knows.
Yeah, we do not have sales quotas. We basically have technical levers and goals. And these goals are to make sure that we connect up with CTOs or be able to help folks understand like what's possible with analytics or machine learning, things like that. Like I mentioned, we work directly with account managers. Account managers have sales goals. They need to hit those levers. We don't, but we align with them to make sure that their customers can make sure they can hit those goals on the AM's behalf. So we basically assist the AMs to hit those sales lever goals, but we are not backed by sales goals on our side.
Cool. Thanks for clearing
that up. Yeah, to add to that. Yep. So Pat mentioned a few of our SA goals, adding onto that, also making sure our customers' security posture is kept high, and also cost optimization is another one, making sure their architecture is as optimized as possible. That's another big goal of ours. There's another one that's not very specific to SA, but we also make sure our customers receive the help beyond just technical help, like things like help them with their go-to-market initiative, help them run their business from several other aspects as well, not just SA. Again, this is maybe like partnering together with the account team or with other teams with AWS, leverage whatever internal resources we have at Amazon.
Thank you. And now, just to wrap up with the sales quota thing, I've been at AWS since 2016. That's one thing that I really like. When I'm advising a customer, I have no sales quota attached to that. So my advice is solely based on the architecture and what's in the best interest of the customer without any pressure of a sales quota over my shoulder. So I really like that a bunch. Probably take, maybe one more question here from the audience and we could go back to the regularly scheduled program. One thing that we touched on earlier, but we'll just double click on it one more time. So Pramod says, do we need to know all the services to become a solution architect? I'll go ahead and take that one. The answer is luckily no. I'll expand on this one a little bit. What I've always done as a solution architect is I will take a look at the customers I'm supporting for that particular year and make sure that I'm very strong on the services that my customers are either using or I'm going to suggest they use to be successful. I'm strong in those areas. Additionally, I will satiate my natural curiosity for different services that may or may not be something my customers are using, just to satisfy my natural curiosity. So yeah, hope that helps you, Pramod.
Let me jump in on that one too, because I think another thing that I see from the manager perspective that maybe when you're hands-on with it, great, you don't notice as much too, is there's the services and there's knowing the services, but the real rock star SAs like Greg, they know solutions. Like it's more about understanding how parts and pieces go together and what are the best parts to swap into a few different types of ways that customers architect on the platform, more than it is like knowing every single type of EC2 instance and the nuance of every piece or whatever. It's more understanding like a methodology around what's the best families for these types of solutions, or what's the realm we're going to go down. And then it works like concentric circles where you start and you're like, okay, we're starting in this top level solution that I know about because I've gotten to know my customer base. I know what's important to them. I'm educating myself up around what's important here. And then you'll, as you start to get in on the pieces, you'll dial in a little more. And that's maybe where you start to leverage an expert or whatever. And then you might get down to the level where it's even more prescriptive. And that's where we have programs and specialized teams with things like, we have this thing called Data Lab, or we have another thing called SaaS Factory, where it's like a specialized team around the solution, and they'll come in and really dive deep on it. So it really is, there's a ton of services, but you're expected to just know how all of the pieces fit together. And then maybe you get deep on the stuff that's really interesting to you, or things that overlap with your background. Like, I'm a web developer historically and still dabble in that stuff. So I'll tinker with those services because that's the stuff that's interesting to me. But don't ask me about some of the like deeper pieces of ML SageMaker technology or anything like that, because that's not my wheelhouse.
Gotcha. I'm glad you pointed that out too, Ryan, because I know a lot of folks that are trying to become a solution architect, one of the areas they focus on, as they should, are certifications. And certifications are wired where you really need to be able to go super deep to pass the certifications. And that is also a good muscle to exercise. But when you actually become an architect in the field, that's only one dimension, as you hinted at, to be successful. You also not only need to go super deep, you need to be able to see the bigger picture. You can have all those components put together. So yeah, I really like that. Nice.
Yeah, I would say those certifications are helpful, but they're not the only thing you need. You also need to understand the fundamentals of this system designs, basically. Understand all the design considerations and like consider how the trade-off between like scalability, reliability, and cost, performance, and based on the priority, how do we utilize AWS services to build the system? So I think system design is definitely very important on top of, or not as a foundation of, all the certs as offer. Specifically, I wanted to show everybody one book that has helped me, this one.
Designing Data Intensive Applications. Cool.
Yes. So lots of system principles.
For those that are watching, who's the author, Shu? It's called Designing Data.
Looks like Martin, an O'Reilly book.
Kleppmann.
Okay.
Martin Kleppmann. Can you
Martin Kleppmann. Cool. All right, you heard it from Shu. She says that's a good one to pick up. So put that on your reading list.
I'll add really quick that all the things that we're mentioning here, certifications, you come in, you're not expected to know all the services. That's quite literally impossible. There's just so many. And things continue to change. That's number one. Number two is, when you come in, you're going to go through certifications. Like, you actually get trained here when you come in. So there's how you word situations with your customers, how you interact with your customers. The certifications Shu's brought up are the bits and pieces to help understand how you can kick those things off, how you can tailor those conversations, things like that. And then from there, it's just a growing experience, an ever-growing experience. So it's a training 100% of the time. We like to call it drinking from the fire hose. So it's constant inflow of information. And you lean on your teams. We are small, very agile teams that work together. Shu has a team. I have a team. Ryan has a team. We are called the two pizza team, so that we only have only as much as two pizzas can feed for the most part, but they're meant to be agile, innovative, and fast. Yeah. So don't expect you have to come in knowing everything. There's a training fit to this as well while you're here. And it's a ton of fun. It's a ton of fun.
That's great. This is a perfect, I think, segue. One of the questions I wanted to make sure we hit was, what qualities do you look for in an SA candidate? So we've covered some of the tech stuff. Maybe we can take another angle. What are some of the soft skills that are good characteristics and behaviors that make successful SAs?
I would say listening is a big one. Listening to the customer. What is the customer's pain point? Where are they at? Really, we're navigators. They're the drivers. The customer knows best in the case of where they want to go. We help adapt them to where they can go, and we help get them there, right? We want them to be the leaders on driving their innovation for their customers and for their business. But we're here to help them align to see what else is possible and help move them forward. And by going down that path, we do that trust levering. So we pull on those trust levers and get that extra win with them so we can move forward. So the listening element is very impactful. Having a good technical background is also very beneficial, but it's about how you narrate, how you work, how you can cohesively listen and interact with those customers to get their trust. Because like in our teams, we're a bunch of startups that we work with. So a lot of startups are very hold that pocketbook close. So we want to make sure they're feeling good about everything. That's why we touch on that cost optimization lever and things like that. So understanding what the customer needs are, helping to where they can go is really important. But again, that is a training thing too. So there's a training bit to this. I learned a lot of that by just being here. I've also learned in my previous roles before coming here, but I learned a lot just by being here.
Got you. Ryan, looks like you might have had something on the tip of your tongue there.
Yeah, I got two things. One, Google Amazon Leadership Principles. Shout out to the LPs. That's how I think a lot of places have what they call their core values or whatever. But the LPs are really how we live life here in Amazon. I heard it coming in and I'm like, yeah, I've been in places that do that stuff too, but nothing like here. We literally live life that way. But to me, if I'm boiling it down, there's 12 leadership principles. But to me, what I'm looking for as far as soft skills in a really great SA, it comes down to three things. It's curiosity, confidence, and humility. The really best SAs have those three things. They're genuinely curious. So they're curious to learn more about, you know, what we do at AWS, messing with their own stuff, tinkering on their own. They're curious about the customers. The best way to earn trust is ask genuine questions of the customers that really show that you're interested in what they're doing, right? The next thing is competence. If you're undercutting yourself too much, or you're afraid to speak up, or you don't throw your opinions out there, you're going to have a really hard time because the customers are looking for you to be that voice of reason in the room. So you got to be confident, but you can't be arrogant. And that's where humility comes in. You got to understand that the customer is always going to know their application better than you do. There's going to be things better, PSAT or things that when it comes to AWS, but as far as their needs go, they know better than you do. And you have to come into the meetings with that level of humility or you'll never earn their trust.
Yeah, I wanted to jump in on that to Ryan and talk about humility and what I call humble pie. There's a lot of smart folks you're going to be working with. I'm not just talking about AWS colleagues. I'm talking about your customers are going to be razor sharp. And every now and again, you're going to have to eat a slice of humble pie. So somebody's going to know more than you know about it, but use that as a learning opportunity.
We like to use the lever failing fast here. We're all here to fall and learn, and that's normal process, right? But we're also here to lift you back up, to help you grow from that. So that's why you lean on our teams together. Shu, Ryan, and I are very close. We talk together as often as possible, but we're always here to build people up, not down, to make sure that they can accelerate.
That's good. Shu, do you have anything additional to close out then?
Yeah, I definitely agree with what Pat and Ryan said. To add to that, I think it's very important to be able to function or work under ambiguity, unlike lots of other roles, like software engineer, for example. As a software developer, I'm working on this feature or this product is very clearly defined on your whatever product management tool you're using. But as an SA, there's not really a clearly defined, like once you start a day, like what are you going to do today? Like a lot of times you define your problem, you define a solution, right? Really being able to operate under ambiguity is very important. Being that thought leader with the customer or with the internal team, enable the customer, really take that leadership position. I think that's very important.
Thanks, Shu. Cool. One question I wanted to hit real quick. This is a simple one. Can clarify. Shane from our audience says, do you work in an office or can you work from home? And what does travel look like?
Yes.
All right. next question.
It's that great question, Shane. I know it's pretty, it's a common one at the moment. We're definitely a flexible place. Again, we're working backwards from the customer, right? So it's really what works best for you and what works best for the customer. And a lot of our customers in our three teams are startups. So it's great to go and get to see them when we can and go deep with them. They love it. They don't want us camped out in their office though. It's not like an enterprise gig where they want you in there every week or whatever, because they want to get their stuff done. They like to see you. So there is some travel, but it's not a consulting gig where you're on the road all the time. And then as far as office, we've got beautiful offices for AWS that you absolutely are welcome to not visit. There are people like the four of us that all work from home mostly. We'll go into office for their special events or whatever. And then there's folks that prefer to be in an office that go in there every day. But we don't do any sort of 3 days a week mandate or anything like that, at least not at this point. There's nothing held to us. And it's really never been part of the SA gig is that, because the nature of the role is it's really about getting the stuff done for the customers, and you can do that wherever you can do that.
Exactly. Cool. I know, Ryan, you had another question that you wanted me to put on the dashboard there. I think I saw that.
Yeah. Yeah, I can read it. It was Michael's about how big are your teams, span of control, and also how much time are you able to spend developing your team members? And I'll touch on that, and then I'd love to hear what Shu and Pat have to say too. But so I have 7 roles on my team. So again, we're 2 pizza teams. But for me as a manager and span of control, like we decide our own team strategy within our team. And for me, developing my team members is like 90% of my job. That's that is what a line manager's job is here at AWS, as far as I'm concerned. It's frequent one-on-ones. It's talking about how do I help you along the road to develop, help you see the things. What are you passionate about? How can I reflect that back to you? How can we turn that into tangible goals that you can create for yourself? And how do I help you hold yourself accountable to those goals or throw them away if we decide they're not important anymore? I thought about this in the beginning when someone asked the question, but it was really the way SA works here is back to the old Steve Jobs adage about hire smart people and then let them tell us what to do. The SA teams that work best is when we hire the right people and then empower them to get to know the customers really well and then tell us how they should be spending their time to do what's best for those customers. And then my job is just to help keep you honest to that. Talk with you, get you thinking about it and going, oh yeah, maybe I should be working on this. That sounds great. How do we put that together and turn it into something that we can measure? Because that's another piece of it too, is Amazon being Amazon, we're data driven. And so another part of what I do is helping you articulate the things you do so that you can gather the data along the way to show your successes or learn from the failures along the way really quickly. Get in and see, oh yeah, this isn't working. I got to retune this, or maybe I should focus my time elsewhere. So
nice.
I like to add, I will say Ryan is 100% on the money. He was my manager for a while. Excellent manager. Very people oriented, very much about you as an individual, not about necessarily a company, more about you. And that's super important. As SAs, the frontline folks, you're the leaders. You're the leaders for the customer. It's important that you are empowered to disrupt and find what's possible. You're the leader. We are the cheerleaders. We cheerlead you on. We make sure you get the things that you need, get the barriers out of your way so you can get moving. Look at Greg here. Greg is on my team and he's a live streamer. He's done this as a passion project and it's taken off and we're like, go after it. This is amazing. So it's all about what is best for not only you, not only for our customers, but as a whole, as a one team. And then we cross-pollinate that between our teams here. So when you think about like our leadership principles, our customer obsession, some folks may think that it's just about our customers, but it's not. It's about our employees too. Those LPs are inwards as well. It's about being customer obsessed with each other to make sure that we can gain trust with one another. We can disrupt, we can grow, we can do more than what's possible. That's what allows us to accelerate. That's allows us to be the best as what we can do.
Thank you, Pat. I'm going to put another question on here. And this is a question I personally get a lot on my different channels. We have a lot of folks that are interested in the tech industry or breaking into tech that don't necessarily come from a traditional technical background. What advice, Ryan, Shu, and or Pat, would you have for somebody working to jump into the tech industry and get into cloud?
Shu, do you have thoughts on that one?
I think if it's for me, I would start with doing lots of studying and researching and playing with that technology, get into the AWS console and build some projects and actually play with the tools. And after you have some hands-on experience, I think when you talk with the recruiter, you can show them, okay, this is what I can do. Although it might not have been my professional background, but I can deliver this. That's also an indicator of your capability of learning and self-improvement. Besides that, you could consider joining some bootcamp or technical school, like some part-time program to get your foot into the door of the tech world. Yeah, that's what I can think of.
Thank you, Shu.
I think I agree with everything Shu just said. I would, at a higher level, I'd spend some time searching around and figuring out what you're interested in from a technical perspective. Technology is this vast world, right? And especially cloud too, right? So I'd start reading around on, some technical blogs and get some books like that book that Shu held up and start seeing if that stuff, what part of it holds interest to you. And there's a ton in the AWS cloud world that you could dive a little deeper in on. There's AI, there's ML, there's the microservices architecture. There's all these different areas that are interesting that sort of overlap with deeper interest. And if you're coming from a particular industry, like travel or healthcare or whatever, there's lots of overlaps in there too, where you can see. And then if you have that idea of here's an area of technology that I'm interested in, check out AWS workshops. There's a million like kind of self-guided workshops that you can play with on our website that you can get in and just start messing with things, and you can see where you get stuck and run into pieces. And that will tell you where you need to go and shore up, whether it's in a boot camp or taking some classes on Udemy or something like that, to find those places. I wouldn't just dive in to, oh, I need to go take a technical program before gauging your interest, because if you don't find something that actually strikes your passion, it's going to be a long slog getting yourself educated up to a level where you could do this for a job.
Yeah, I think, Ryan, you hit the nail on the head. You got to want to do this, which means you got to like it to some degree so you can hang in there. A lot of us have been hanging in there for decades. I'm like 2 decades plus into this tech journey and still going. Got some gray hairs in my head, but they're still there.
Yeah. If you love to learn and you love to see bleeding edge things that can come out of what's possible in technology, places like AWS, that's a great place to land, because you'll always be learning. We'll always be having the opportunity as SAs to talk to our customers, hear what they're doing bleeding edge, roll that back into our own repertoire about communicating back to other customers about what's possible and just crafting that going forward. And it's an ever changing world, and it is an aggregate world that keeps on rotating. It's a circular world that keeps moving. So if you love to learn and you just love that spongy feeling about what happens with technology, then an SA role is very well suited for you, because you're going to stay on that track continually. You will not be bored. You will not be bored.
And that's for sure.
I just want to add on too. I noticed further down in the chat, Vanessa asked about if you need a bachelor's degree in order to be an SA. And the answer is no. We put in these job descriptions, bachelor's degree or relevant experience. But really where the bachelor's degree comes in is you don't need to have one, have the piece of paper, but the places where you're going to run up against it is one, technical depth, background in technology matters. So you're going to want to have at least self-educated enough on that. The other thing is Amazon has a writing culture. So there's a lot of writing that happens here. If you haven't gone all the way through for a bachelor's degree, you want to put some focus on just making sure you have polished writing skills, because there is a writing component even to getting through the interview process here. So those are two key places. And that's why we continue to have the bachelor degree as something that's on the JD, but it's not a requirement. It's that or relevant experience in the important parts of the job.
Yeah, I'm glad we got a chance to address that, Ryan. I personally get that question a lot, in addition to another question I'll mention in a minute. But that's very comforting to those out there that have the technical skills, have the certifications, and have the experience. It's not a doomsday diagnosis on a job description that says, oh, you got to have a bachelor's degree. It's a hard requirement. I'm sorry. Yeah, that's really good. One other quick thing I wanted to hit, and then I got some really good questions for the remaining 12 minutes. Doesn't a solution architect need to know how to code to get the job and to be successful? Do I need to know how to write code?
Nope. It's a benefit. It helps. You're that much more prescriptive. But no, you don't. You just need to know how the services work and how you can dovetail them in to be prescriptive, right? So like I was mentioning at the beginning of the call, you don't need to do hands-on keyboard work. It's just literally about like how you can help be prescriptive to the customer about possibilities. And you can lean on other specialists here to fill the other gap. They want to work on POC work and stuff like that. And we also have partners. Our partners here actually are who we align to actually do the hands-on keyboard work. So we'll align customers to those partners that we have. So no, you do not. And I will throw in to the education point, I don't have a college degree. I didn't go to college. This was all just based off of experience. So again, it's all about what's possible, what you've learned, and how you can craft conversations with your team and with your customers. That's key. That's super key.
And I just wanted to jump in to say, Pat was a superstar SA, now newly minted solution architect manager. So The proof is in the pudding.
That's
all right.
True.
I got some good questions here to start closing things out. We talked about all this good stuff. Now we got folks excited about wanting to be a solution architect. Let's talk about the interview process, which we just got a question in the comment. Perfect timing to hear from Vanessa. What does the interview process look like at AWS, and how do I start getting ready for these things?
Oh, we can't give away too much of the secret sauce, though I know there's other places you can Google around that will find it. But I will say that if you're prepared appropriately, I think some people feel like the interview process can be a bit grueling here. I personally feel like it's pretty straightforward if you know what you're doing. And really, the way the process works is go back, like I said, those leadership principles, look them up. If Amazon is something you're interested in any way, reading those leadership principles is at the core. And all of our interviewing is around that. And it's really finding our people at their core, people who comfortably exhibit those leadership principles. And I think, like for me, I went in and I got pointed at them by a recruiter. I didn't say it to me, but I've been at Amazon just, I think, 2 years next week. When I went and read through them the first time, I'm like, oh yeah, these are all naturally resonate with me. I'm this type of person. I've had this said about me in other jobs. And so it fits for me. And then working from there, it's really then coming up with anecdotes. Like, what are some demonstrative anecdotes that you have from your past that show these leadership principles in you? So it's the interview process is just storytelling. And if you can do that effectively, then it's pretty easy. Easy is probably the wrong word because it's five 1 hour yeah. long interviews.
Not necessarily
that a lot of times
easy.
Are back to back to back. But it's not like we're not like the kind of place where we're going to give you some unsolvable math problem and be like, okay, yep. figure out how
many
to solve
oranges
this,
does it take to fill a Super Bowl stadium? You have 2 seconds.
Figure that out. There's no gotcha questions.
Yeah.
If you had to be an endangered species animal, which one would you be or anything like that? It's all straightforward questions that, you know, if you're fit, it should be easy.
So Ryan is...
Although I...
Oh, go ahead, Shu.
Sorry. Yeah, I was just going to add, in addition to leadership principle question rounds of interviews, there's also a technical phone screen. So there is a certain technical bar for both tech breadth and depth. So basically, we're going to ask you, so of all the general IT areas, like networking, security, compute, databases, analytics, machine learning, which areas are your areas of depth? So for the tech breadth, we're going to ask you around 200 level questions. But for your specified technical depth areas, we are going to expect you like about 300 to 400 level of expertise.
To give an idea, when we talk about the leveling, 100 is surface, 400 is deep. Right. So when we have our interviews, we're going to dive deep. It's one of our leadership principles. We're going to dive deep with you to understand, like, how have you overcome things? What are your wins? What are the losses? Like, how have you accelerated for yourself? How have you accelerated others? But these are the same kind of promotion points that we want to put in front of our customers when we talk to them. We're going to ask deep questions. We're going to want to know more about what they're doing, how they've gotten there to help them accelerate, right? So that's part of this journey with the interview process as well, is like understanding more about you. How did you accomplish X, Y, and Z to get to where you were today?
Yeah, just to simplify, just to be really clear on the 100, 200, 300. 100 is, do you know what it is? 200 is, can you explain it? 300 is, have you done it? And 400 is, can you show someone else how to do it in depth?
Oh, that's good. That needs to be written somewhere.
That's perfect.
Nice.
Well said, Ryan.
Yeah. One other thing I would to close this one up. So Pat was saying that tech screen is dive deep, but there's also a leadership principle called earn trust. So this is not about just pretending to know stuff even when you don't know. The questions are designed to get you to a certain depth, to a certain point where you may not know the follow-on answer. And you have to demonstrate and be able to have that humility, as Ryan was saying, that, you know what, I don't know that information, but it's something that I'm going to work on improving, that type of thing. So there's that earned trust component. So it's not just about getting all the answers right on the tech screen, but be able to determine what is your depth and be honest with that. Cool. Let's see here. Okay. So there's your phone screen part. Can we touch on just like the loop real quick? That's an iconic thing. Got about 5 minutes here. Looks like the short version of the loop. So you've made it through your tech screen. What are we doing now? Are we doing one combined kind of tech cultural fit type of phone screen these days? 60, 90 minutes or? Okay.
We're doing a phone screen, 60 minute phone screen, but even for Loop, there's like a few more technical questions as well.
In the Loop, okay. In the Loop, Ryan was saying this is an all day exercise. So how many interviews could the candidate expect in that Loop?
I think it's five.
Around five or so. Yeah, and they're roughly, what, 45 to minutes to an hour?
They're an hour long.
Gotcha. And you have a lunch kind of wedged there in the middle of it?
Yep.
Good. So
sometimes they're spread over a couple of days if you have a job like lots of people do and you can't do it in one full day, we can split it over two. They can be accommodating if they need to be, if we need to be. But something we do try to do is we have this thing called the 2 and 5 process. So from a phone screen to finding out if you move on to a Loop is 2 days that we promise. And from a Loop to finding out if you pass through is 5 days. And we're really trying to be focused on making the interview process as kind of transparent and palatable as possible for the candidates. So once you get into it, so hold us to that too, because it's something I personally care a lot about is that we need to treat candidates with respect. And I know that's not something that happens a lot in tech lately. So I try to at least do my part to go above and beyond, because I realize that it's our privilege that someone decides to put in the vast amount of effort it takes to interview for a job here at AWS. Yeah. We ask a lot of folks that apply to work here. So the least I can do is be flexible and generous with my time to assist you through it.
Gotcha. Thanks, Ryan. So we got about 3 minutes left. Let's fast forward. You decided you want to be an SA. You got through your phone screen. You made it through the Loop. You get a job offer. What does my 60 to 90 days look like when I come on board,
Dave? You jump in. You're going to be assigned an onboarding buddy. So you'll have somebody that's tenured, understands the process. It's going to align with you to help you accelerate. You also be fronted with a training track, an onboarding kind of list of items and checklists that you go through. These are different aspects of training about how we work inclusively here at AWS, how we want to do messaging with our customers, many different things that help you accelerate, right? And then again, you have that onboarding buddy that helps you through that. We also do technical kind of review work. So you'll go through an exercise where you're going to deliver to a panel to us what's possible, like with a customer, like we'll be your customer. This is all here to help you better understand like what the end goal looks like when you're actually in front of that customer. So there's many different tracks, usually spans a couple of months of training, plus months of training. It's all part of the plan. But then when you jump in, you align all up with other customers and all the other SAs to help springboard you forward. I know there's a lot more there. Ryan Shu, you could probably add some value, but it's all a one team effort to try to bring you in to see what's possible and help you align.
Awesome. Thanks, Pat. Couldn't have said it better myself. All right, we got 1 minute left. I want to be respectful of everyone's time. So let's just quickly talk about next steps. So if you're interested in the AWS Solution Architecture role post live here, I'm going to go in and post a link that takes you to a filtered list of startup positions. I believe, Ryan, it's in California. Is how it's filtered on?
Yeah, we've actually created one job description that's in there that's like a pool. So it doesn't mean there's only one job. We've got a whole bunch of openings that we could take people for, but there's this one link to apply that we're using to build the pool. So Greg will add that to this event. Go ahead, click in, apply in there, and a recruiter will reach out. We'll get you into the system, into the pipeline.
Cool. Thank you for everyone's participation. I've really enjoyed this a bunch. We had a lot of engagement from the audience, and something tells me this is not the last time we're going to do something like this. So on that note, hope you have an awesome rest of your day and week, and we'll catch you on the next live. Take care.